You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slums in some metropolitan centres are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush.
The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
Amy is a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Kill your lawn and kick your fence. A show about how we live in the cities and suburbs and the ideologies behind them.
Fridays every fortnight at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 3CR 855 AM.
Good morning and welcome to 3CR's Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. We are broadcasting today to you from the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded, and I'd like to acknowledge any First Nations listening today and the elders past, present and emerging. I'm your host, Amy. And today we are going to be talking about returning to a topic with previous guests on gentrification and interesting intersections of queerness with that. But first, I'd just like to say thank you for if any of you caught and some of the messages that have come through. Just thank you to people who listened to the Dissociative Identity Awareness Day broadcast. It was a real privilege to be able to do that on Wednesday. And I think Tuesday we will have uploads of the full broadcast and extended interviews. So if you've gone to the website and you're like, where's the broadcast? It's coming. We've got a public holiday. I've also got to do some more editing. So Tuesday, that stuff will be online and you can hear the full interviews that we did. Also, we're going to start off with a little bit of news, and I'll get my guests to maybe comment on it as well. That relates to last week's stuff, but I'm just going to first introduce you to one of my guests today. Other one's on her way, soon to be here. So hello, everyone. Welcome to... please introduce yourself. It's early.
It is early. Hi, everyone. My name is Cy Young. I was here the other month. I prepared a proper blurb for myself this time. So, I'm a generally mad, queer, trans, femmy thing of mixed English, Irish, German, Chinese, Malay, and Baba Nyonya Peranakan heritage. I'm one of those so-called activists who's particularly involved around COVID work, working with local First Nations communities, helping out IV drug users, and furthering the agenda of true queer degeneracy. And a lot of that just involves very unglamorous work on the ground, keeping people alive.
Yeah, and I think something I try to be more mindful of, I use queer and LGBT interchangeably, mostly because I just don't want to have to say the entire acronym, but... what does queerness mean to you? Because for me, it's a resistance of normalcy. And I don't think actually all queers really identify with that sort of radical definition of queer. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, to me, queer is like the true abolishment of everything. It's a rejection of this entire system and structure that is oppressing people. Being properly queer means tackling decolonization. It means tackling ableism. It means like name an issue. We're meant to be against it. We're meant to be punk as all hell.
Yeah. And yeah, so I think, yeah, that's probably just like a good one to state at the outset of this is that, you know, that's sort of my vibe. And yeah, that's the sort of the vibes we're bringing to this conversation today. And yeah, I think because, you know, like we're a diverse community, the LGBTQIA plus spectrum, you know, like diverse opinions, diverse beliefs. But yeah, so we're coming at it from that sort of radical perspective. So I was going to move on just quickly to, I was just getting it up. I was using you as a moment to to get it up. So last week, listeners may recall that I was, last fortnight, listeners may recall that I had Kieran Stewart Asherton on and Matt from Basalt Buddies talking about the absolute ecocide and destruction of local ecosystems in the cities and suburbs and decolonizing this space and perhaps even revegetating and rebuilding. So since then, there has been a media release from the Grassy Plains Network called Outrageous Destruction of Precious Melbourne Grassland After Government's Collective Protecting Failure. And I'm going to read that release and I'm going to make a few comments. An irreplaceable grassland in Melbourne's west has been bulldozed, with authorities across all levels of government failing to protect it despite being aware of its, of the destruction. The privately owned land, I'm going to omit the address here because I'm not sure if privately owned means a residence, so just going to admit that there is an address, on Melbourne's western edge was destined to become part of the long-promised 15,000-hectare Western Grassland Reserve. The reserve is a desperate attempt to protect the last large remaining patches of critically endangered grassland in Victoria, and it would be a place for all Victorians, where a place where all Victorians can go to enjoy nature. But despite local, state, and federal authorities knowing the bulldozers were ripping through 40 hectares of the grassland throughout the holiday period and went well into January, they all failed their obligations to protect it. Critically endangered is the last step before extinction, and that grassland is irreplaceable, says Grassy Plains Network facilitator Dr. Adrian Marshall. Once stretching from Melbourne to South Australia, today only 1% of our grasslands survive. These native flower meadows are now heading toward irreversible decline. This is an outrageous and deeply concerning situation. Developers are cynically undermining the rule of law for profit. They are robbing the future residents of Melbourne's outer west of public reserve land of great natural beauty and extraordinary conservation value. Who's in charge here? This native grassland was supposed to be protected under national and state laws. It has a public acquisition overlay, an environmental significance overlay, and is zoned rural conservation, yet no one is stopping it being cleared. The Western Grassland Reserve is part of Melbourne's Strategic Assessment MSA, a program put in place in 2010 to protect not just our last grasslands, but the endangered frogs, lizards, bandicoots, orchids, and all other threatened wildlife that call them home. The Melbourne Strategic Assessment needs to deliver what it promised, not just be a shortcut for windfall developer profit, says Dr. Marshall. These developers need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. They won't stop until someone makes a very expensive example of them. The government is also going to find additional grassland to reserve in compensation for this loss. The annihilation of this irreplaceable grassland is devastating. We want an overhaul of how compliance with environmental laws is enforced too. The current system is broken. National and state environmental laws need to be strengthened, and we need a nature cop with real legal teeth. I'm just reading the quotes here. The Environmental Justice Australia co-chief executive officer and lawyer Elizabeth McKinnon said Australia's state and federal environmental laws were failing to protect rare and precious species. While not able to comment specifically on the Mount Cottrell land clearing project, Ms. McKinnon said, "Time and time again, environmental lawyers work on cases where Australia's unique and endangered plants are destroyed or animals find their homes bulldozed around them. It is clear that our nature laws are not strong enough to properly protect them." We're just going to skip a little bit further forward because it's talking about broken promises, which I think we're all very familiar with from the Albanese government. And it finishes with, on Tuesday, 18th of February, 2025, the landowner of Conservation Area 9 pled guilty in Sunshine Magistrates Court. The landowner and his company were fined a combined $170,000 plus $90,000 in costs. The landowner escaped criminal conviction. So I just want to relate this back to some themes from last week, because I'm hoping that in our conversations we can learn and think about what it is that this show and our guests are talking about. So first of all, reform and checks and balances, so-and-so, look, they provide some protections. No one's going to deny that they provide some protections, that they may pull the handbrake up a little bit on neoliberal hell. But it does not mean that the direction that everything is going in is towards this. So what happens when a new suburb gets built, because I work in these areas, is it gets moonscaped, which is something, it's a term that one of our previous guests used, who also is sort of in this urban planning space. Moonscaping is just the complete and utter destruction of what's there. Now, actually, what's already there has already been severely trashed or destroyed once, because it's usually already farmland. And it sounds like from this story that it is farmland. So we're not just talking about a grasslands that is important with important species. We're also talking about a grasslands that's actually probably got a massive amount of invasive species already experienced a lot of destruction, and already had a lot of animals and plants no longer living that used to live there, and of course people that were there, the original sovereign inhabitants, who would also have been very vital to that ecosystem. So the kind of protection we're talking about is the protecting, like, the last scarabs of what hasn't been destroyed, or what it's already sort of been largely damaged. And I guess the thing is that if you've been paying attention to politics at the moment, it seems like both sides of politics, in terms of both parties, seem to be heading in this neoliberal direction. And I'm reminded of a civil rights quote where I think it's something along the lines of, you can't use the master's tools.
Audre Lorde.
Yes.
The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house, I believe.
Yes. And so, look, we know, if you follow many of the shows here on 3CR, that both governments are basically going through neoliberal agendas. They favor the billionaires. They favor the property developers. They favor the capitalist system. They also favor the colonial system, and they're intertwined. But it's good to start talking about them as separating them a bit in the conversation, so that us anti-capitalists don't unintentionally become colonialists, which is what we were talking about with Kieran last week. What are your thoughts on that story? Just hearing that, how does that sit with you, Sayoung?
Icky. I'm going to process that slowly. Deeply upsetting.
Yeah. And what do you think about this idea that we just have to have someone, the right people in government. I mean, I'm just going to throw the obvious example. Donald Trump just came in, right? Like, the Democrats deliberately did not go for Bernie Sanders. We could make criticisms of Bernie Sanders, but he's one of the best polled people for to be president. And he probably, out of the American political spectrum of politicians, probably has the best reforms. And the Democrats would rather risk a fascist like Donald Trump and his party and everything that's happening now than have Bernie come and challenge the neoliberal order.
Yeah, it's the matter of ultimately nothing put together through any kind of political system, or like, oh, we need to have this person overseeing this. It's all part of the colonial project at the end of the day. No matter how effective or quote unquote sustainable we make it, it's still the colonial project. Anytime we implement the legal system as we have it at the moment, that is a direct attack on Aboriginal law to enforce those policies.
And, you know, like, so the election here coming up, federal election, a lot of people are talking about, we need like a hung parliament. We need lots of independents and greens. And I will go back to that example, which I'm borrowing from someone else, by the way. I heard it the other week at a conference, of pulling the handbrake up a bit. It's not the handbrake on everything. And it's, again, if you think of that metaphor, we're just slowing down, but still on the same course. Yeah.
It's what I found. It does not matter who's in charge. I will still be raising money and trying to house people and get people medication that they urgently need. People like me will still be doing survival work no matter who's going on.
Yeah.
And I think it was Kieran who was saying that, say, a more progressive government is just a more effective evil because it convinces more people, oh, we're fine now. We don't actually have to put in the work because it's easier to remain ignorant.
One of the things us leftists will point out is how, and it's funny because it's probably the most debated thing on the left, is how the powers that be create division. And so, you know, we will see, and we did see it in The Voice, leaders of the Black Sovereign Movement considered like the division, the problem, right? Where it's actually like what they're doing is they're trying to diminish people like Kieran's arguments so that they can remove the threat. But the real, like, there's so many like divisions and things happening around us today that are just distractions. Like, yes, we are a challenge to the Western patriarchy by being trans. We are challenging the Western patriarchy and the Western ideas of gender. And so that is, in a sense, revolutionary. And so they are targeting us, but they are also focusing the conversation so heavily on trans people, so heavily on marginalized and minorities, that they are obfuscating the real issues, which is that, say, for the broader working class, that they are actually suffering under this neoliberal hellhole. Obviously, Trump's going after immigrants really intensely. Yes, trans people too, but immigrants, like with ICE right now, we are seeing, you know, early Nazi Germany with those detention camps. And so, you know, the working class of America and, of course, Australia as well, largely believe that immigrants and refugees are stealing their jobs, causing inflation and all these things, when it's actually the rich billionaire class. And like, Amy, cite your sources.
Like, society.
Like, I mean, I think everyone, like, it's just endless. Just listen to 3CR Breakfast like every day, and you hear like endless people from universities and stuff. Like, if you don't believe this, I don't know how to help you.
Don't know why you're listening to 3CR.
Yeah. We might go to a little song and check up on where our guest is in case she's outside or something. And then we will get straight into gentrification and queerness. But thanks for bearing with me, and thanks for hearing that story. I thought it was really perfectly example of what we were talking last week. And I do support the Grassy Plains Network, by the way. I think we have to be mindful that we need to, that we can't just rely on checks and balances. We can't rely on a chosen few to protect us, and that we need major systemic change.
Just let it. Come down to Camp Anarchy, 8th to the 10th of March, 2025, for a chance to connect with community and commune with nature. Join us for workshops and music at the beautiful Camp Eureka site in the Yarra Valley. Bring your ideas for an egalitarian First Nation and worker-centred future free of capitalist oppression. Workshop proposals welcome. Contact info@campanarchy.org. Camp Anarchy is a 3CR supporter.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Trans bandwagon to push their woke agenda onto their customers.
Your son is dead, killed by the woke mind virus. So I vowed to destroy the woke mind virus.
Woke mind virus, pushing civilization towards suicide.
A brief interruption from the woke agenda at 3CR.
And you're back listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, or streaming at 3cr.org.au. And we're in the studio today with Sayoung, and soon to be Vasi, hopefully.
Now.
We see your messages, Vasi, if you're listening, take your time. And you just heard Red River by Eli Shimada, which is a song in support of Palestine and, I guess, emotional response to the horrors we're seeing out of that. So we're going to move on now to gentrification and queerness. And you've had some thoughts. And I like for this conversation, so I could go to an academic here for this conversation. And I'm sure there are good things to talk about with academics. But I think let's talk amongst ourselves as people who live through it. Where would you like to start?
I myself wanted to talk about my own family history in St Kilda, which is a Yalakut Willem country, I believe.
Sure, let's start there.
Chinese immigrant family back in the around the 50s in the Second World War, when Japan attacked Darwin, my family evacuated from there. We were split up onto two boats. One arrived here in Melbourne and the other in Sydney. Most of us in Sydney, my great-great-grandfather arrived on his own in Melbourne, was within 24 hours killed in a hit and run by a taxi, and his body was looted, as happens when you're an old Chinese man. and so the rest of the family came down to Melbourne and ended up settling in St. Kilda. Back then, it was obviously a much more of a red light district. It was...
The history of... so many places that like that today, like Oxford Street in Sydney is one that comes to my mind as someone from there.
My nan would always tell her kids not to go out at night because there were ghosts in the trees, which I think is a very charming way to keep them out of trouble.
Hey, at least it's not transphobic.
Pretty good.
Sex worker phobic.
And just in general, I wanted to talk a little bit about St. Kilda's history. Of course, I'm far from an expert, but I find like the queer history in the area as well particularly pressing. One part of its history that always sticks out to me is the death of Adele Bailey, who was a trans sex worker who worked in the area. I believe she might have also been of Maori heritage.
I'm just going to jump in for listeners. if any of the content that we talk about today you find distressing, you can contact... I should have had the numbers in front of me for this. I'll get them up on my phone. There are a couple of places you can go if this conversation is upsetting. So one is Rainbow Door. So Rainbow Door is a queer phone and online service, which you can use to get some support. And their number is 1-800-729-367. You can also go to Switchboard, which you can also find online. And there's, of course, Lifeline. And I'm just getting these numbers up as I go, which is 13, 11, 14. So yes, we will probably continue to discuss today these sort of heavy topics. And so tread carefully, maybe come back and re-listen to this another time if you're not up for it this morning. So sorry to interrupt you there, but let's continue.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming in with that. Yeah, and I understand she disappeared. Adele Bailey disappeared shortly before giving evidence against an undercover police officer.
Yeah.
Which just tells you everything we need to know about the history of police violence against us. And ongoing fears and concerns I have now for my own peers being dragged through the court system and being assaulted by police and having to face them in court.
Yeah.
A lot of very startling parallels.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you've also been reading about the Pride Center recently. Mm. And the Pride Center is an interesting example of what we were talking before about division. The Jacinta Allen government is, people might be aware, is quite opposed to some of the anti-trans and anti-LGBT stuff happening in other states. But it's really just a political game. There are trans people that Jacinta Allen doesn't care about in the prison system, never speaks out about, and sex workers that, yeah. That being said, yes, I acknowledge a Liberal government would be worse. And I acknowledge, particularly in terms of the current campaigning to roll back decriminalization of sex work, Liberal is quite strong to roll that back and criminalize it. So I do acknowledge that there are differences, but these are actually where the divisions occur and the debates occur, because while we're arguing about that, we're ignoring the fact that Jacinta Allen and previously Dan Andrews, who built the Pride Center, are actually kind of creating division through building a monument to say, we love and respect the queer community at the same time, but we are prioritizing the corporate.
We love you on these conditions.
We love you on these conditions. Yeah. So, and if we're thinking about that queer identity as that for there's a portion of us who are radically rejecting so much of our society, and in solidarity with people like First Nations people and the working class, then we can actually see that the Pride Center is a strategical thing to divide our community, because what happens is you get the Pride Center for all its positives. It also is something where if we criticize aspects of it, we're not grateful to our masters for giving us the Pride Center.
Oh boy.
And maybe you could talk a little bit more about this, what you've read recently about it.
Yes, I was hopping around a library the other day and came across a lovely book on the history of the Pride Center.
Yeah.
And it was this like quite professionally like produced and funded. I'm not going to talk about the author because I have some bad things to say about the book.
Yeah.
It just offers so blasé in its acknowledgement that, hey, you know, it was such a struggle to get this building set up and there were so many things that got in the way and we were so courageous and had so much perseverance to make it happen. And one of the struggles that these poor, poor developers had when building the Pride Center was that, oh no, the location was being squatted in and there were needles all over the place. And the local community had been complaining about that and going to the police and the city saying, oh, can you please help us with this problem of these homeless people who are in a sheltered area?
Yeah.
So the Pride Center brought in private contractors to remove sheltered areas and board up windows and kick people out.
Yeah.
And now...
The Pride Center or Dan Andrews' government just want to, like, check if you've... You don't have to have the answer.
Yeah, yeah. Just, yeah. Maybe we will not quote me on it, yeah, but I'm pretty sure...
The construction of the Pride Center for our community, that happened.
That happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now it's this space where... I remember one time I went there and there was a lovely little tour guide who had my dead name who showed me around the place. And I thought, oh God, this is me in a worse timeline. Yeah. Hello, Vazi. Vazi's here now. Hello, love. And I remember he was so excited to tell me, so what do you see about the interior of this building when we're in this main hall? And I'm looking at it and he says, it's shaped like an emu egg because we consulted with local First Nations community and there are elders sleeping outside on the bloody street.
Yeah, so no recognition of the traditional customary law and place of elders and, you know, initiated elders. That's the other thing. There's also, this is what Uncle Robbie talks about on his show, is the corporate blacks, or as Kieran might call compradors. Mm-hmm. So this is where you have... a corporate representative body for a community and who you go to and you're like, oh, I want to do the right thing from a good place and respectfully use a local name to show my support of the First Nations community. And instead of having that conversation with the original legal system of First Nations people, you're having it with what is chosen by our government, the colonial government, as the representative body for that. So yes, that emu egg thing, it's like, well, that's another area where people are like, well, they support First Nations people. And
because
it's like,
they shape the building like an emu egg. Oh, yeah. Who gives a damn?
I was going to put you on, Vassie. So Vassie's here.
Yes, I'm fashionably late.
And you look so fashionable, by the way.
Thank you.
I am the least well-dressed person today.
But yeah, what did I miss? Because I'm the one who's late today.
That's okay. And yeah, maybe some listeners are late to the party too. So we started off with a news story about destruction of grasslands happening in Victoria. That was pretty awful, but is happening all the time. It's not an isolated incident. And we just talked about relating it back to our episode last week with Kieran Stewart Asherton and Matt from Basalt Buddies. And basically about tearing down the colony in order to stop this, not checks and balances. Checks and balances pull the handbrake up a bit on the speed of it. I will acknowledge that for some things, Dutton will set things on fire, but the Labour Party will also be making some things worse covertly, and it's just not talked about enough. And Kieran actually makes the point that Labour on paper has been worse for First Nations people. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about those nuances to these conversations and decolonizing. Moving on to now, we're talking about queerness and gentrification. And Sayang is talking about St. Kilda and her own personal connection, family history with St. Kilda, and about how the Pride Centre was built for us. We're saying really the corporate queers, and it's just, it's while on one hand it's like, oh, the Andrews Allen government loves us and they want to support us, it's actually more of a political to divide us, to say people like ourselves here are the problem. You know, we're not grateful, we don't understand the suffering of previous generations, even though we might actually be in contact with some of those people and actually still involved in the struggle and also are also still suffering. So there's this whole division that plays out around something like the Pride Center, and it's a gentrifying force. So gentrification is being done in the name of us, a marginalized minority community. It's being done in the name of us to say, hey, look, we support you because those people, those nasty looking criminals on the street, and I'm going to say criminals because they are criminalized. I don't think they're criminals. Are a danger to you because you're a vulnerable community, and it's pitching vulnerable communities against each other. And so when I encounter another vulnerable community who has bad things to say about the queer community, I go, yeah, you've got good reason to, mm-hmm. you know. Ultimately, we are fighting the same beast,
yeah.
but those divisions are manipulated so that we don't fight the same beast. And this is where I'm just going to finish here, and then I'll let you two talk.
Okay.
But in our leftist community spaces, the mm-hmm. brochelists and types will say,
"Oh shit!
This is where the Vasi." I would ask you this time to swear.
Oh, no.
shoot. Yes. Apologies, previous weeks. I have been a bit liberal with the swearing, and I am working on it.
We're taking a more neoliberal approach to swearing now.
Yes. Oh, no! The horror!
But this is also in leftist spaces where people will say, oh, this is your identity politics.
Mm.
You need to stop talking about your issues, trans people, and get behind anti-capitalism. You need to stop talking about colonization, First Nations people, and get behind anti-capitalism. So division is a big topic, and we are kind of in the heart of it as queer people. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to... So now you've caught up. Listeners are caught up. Let's go back to Sayang, just finishing your thoughts on St. Kilda.
Yeah, and more thoughts on the Pride Centre in particular,
yeah,
and
yeah.
how it's being used. The space has a kitchen that is not operating at most times. The space has bathrooms with showers and towels, not being used most time, only available to staff. The site has lockers, it has meeting rooms, it has all these facilities that could be opened up to the community, but are not being used.
No.
And I understand at the moment the space is going through some financial hardships because, I mean, last I checked, they put themselves in debt making the whole thing. And now there's less traffic going through. Businesses within are having trouble. I know Hares and Hyenas had to put out a call out for community support.
So it's like since I got here and like to listeners who from last time's episode, I've been in this continent for like a little under 2 years, maybe 18 months. So like I managed to, I guess, avoid a lot of the more corporatized queer things just because I kind of went through it. Like, again, like if people remember, I went through a kind of different sort of experience to that and like had a lot of skepticism about these sort of like, you know, just patronizing queer events and like just the real sort of like name brand just slapped on it sort of queer things just because of the fact that I had to have a higher level of skepticism towards that stuff and like had to go through, you know, a time where and in a place where being queer is actually criminalized by law. So it's like a different sort of environment.
Yeah.
So because of that, I had the fortune of not actually being, you know, just accessing those spaces.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not here as a refugee. You're here as a migrant.
Yeah.
Because we don't really... ultimately, our government doesn't see criminalization of queerness as a refugee issue unless it's like one of those countries we want to actually denounce, like our government wants to denounce. So our government will probably accept refugees from countries like Saudi Arabia
yeah.
or Afghanistan and say, look, we love the queers.
Yes.
But yeah. it's a selective yeah, yeah, yeah. and it's also combined with like an Islamophobia. Yeah. So did you want to continue, Sayang?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. So many of these corporate spaces just are massively inaccessible and unsafe. You see racism and classism and any other ism built into them. Ableism in particular, the Pride Center is an inaccessible space. There are no masks being worn in the Pride Center, no purification that I know of. And so in the case of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, it's not safe for me to be in that building. And it's not safe for me to, say, access healthcare from a group like Thorn Harbor, who's in there, who
yeah.
historically were built around AIDS activism
yeah.
and now have received a lot of criticism for completely neglecting the ongoing COVID pandemic.
And perhaps this is also another point where someone might say, and you can tell, I'll be that person, I'll be that conservative type, or,
uh-huh.
and I'll say, well, look at what we've given you.
Mm.
You've got this, we have fun. This is, I'm turning into a Labor politician right now. I'm putting on the Labour mask and I'm saying, this is not true. We have allocated X funding to this. We have supported programs like this and we are doing stuff for your community. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I had a friend who once said something about like, sometimes you just had to like, just go suck up to the devil to like, in a way, more polite way, because apparently swearing is off on the show. Because like, she put it in a much less PC way, but sometimes you kind of had to do that when you have no choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, absolutely. And Sayong, I know you've done a lot of thinking, so I'm sort of looking to you if you've got another topic you'd like to open up that you wanted to talk about today.
Okay, yeah, I guess this is a pretty smooth segue into the community spaces we actually need that aren't corporatized and building alternatives to events like Midsummer, for example.
Yeah.
And again, about the Midsummer thing, like, my friend did say the same thing about, like, say regional or like refugee artists using Midsummer as a platform because they're not getting anything else. That's that problem too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's, we get held hostage by
things. That's sadly true. And again, like, if you have come from countries where your essentially identity is completely illegal, or you could be like straight up killed for being yourself, then Midsummer is actually, sadly, might be the only thing you got.
And also challenging that narrative that that country's history has always been hostile to these identities.
That, and that's the most important thing, because like, I mean, there's so many pre-colonial like records of the fact that, you know what, before colonization and before the Victorian era, there these countries or like these nations may have been more welcoming, even though it might not be understood in like the same way and under the same labels, you know? So like, that's also an important thing to keep in mind. It's a different time. It's probably a different place and a different culture and a different kind of importance placed on certain identities and gender variants and sexual variants. But like, ultimately that is historically known.
Yeah.
So this, it's not as simple, but it's also not as simple as saying, hey, this always happened, because there's always going to be like some variation. Like, it's not like saying, hey, all of the hijras in India were well regarded, because not always historically. Yeah. Like, sure, the community might have been a little bit more expansive back in the day before colonization, and right now they are going through quite a lot, but then also Brahmin, like upper caste Indian scriptures, like the Manusmriti, for example, the Law of Manu, as it's called, might have some sort of bullshit in it that is also used by the upper caste to like criminalize gender variants, and might have been in the past too, maybe to a lesser extent, maybe to a greater extent, we don't know, we can speculate, but like, it wasn't always the same.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think what one of the things I got Kieran to speak about last week is the Marxist idea that first there was primitivism, then there was slavery, then there was feudalism, then there was capitalism, and we were challenging that, and we sort of focused on the universality of those claims, that, you know, this is what it is for the entire world, and that's just not true.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's an argument to be made that that's also a reductionist analysis of history.
Yeah, it is.
Because the Roman Empire is sort of slotted into being the slavery time, but it's also the colonial time through Europe. Like, teaching, and then through them, the Roman Catholic Church spread Christianity, and then European nations purged the pagan, you know, quote-unquote pagan, which is really the indigenous beliefs. The England formed the United Kingdom, which is a colonial conquest, and then that led to the Crusades and the Hundred Year War. So I think, you know...
And also to point on that, the fact that the Christianization of Europe was literally happening, like, to Nordic pagans, you know, like, it was happening in as far back as the 8th and 9th centuries CE. So, like, it's like, it really kind of boils down to Christianization well as, like, colonialism.
And so homophobia and transphobia aren't, in fact, capitalist constructs. These are things that have come in and out of fashion in history. And so, like, I am an anti-capitalist. A lot of what Marx says, I'm like, hell yeah, but we need to... be further along than 150 years ago.
It's a
pretty much
a Kalan framework. Let's work on that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, even the Romans were basically doing the thing of, hey, you can, like, we will worship, like, we will take your gods into our pantheon, and, like, kind of fuse them and make our own little thing, but also we're going to quote-unquote civilize you.
Yeah, and...
because, like, the concept of race and barbarians was based on, like, someone speaking another language.
Yes.
So classical antiquity kind of saw it like that, whereas, like, that has changed over time.
Yeah, when Judith Butler was asked in a recent interview, what is gender? Is there a universal theory of gender? They were like, no. And that they sort of basically avoid doing that. And that to even answer that question, you would need a multilingual, multicultural answer because of how many variations there are in genders across language and culture and history. So, I'm mindful of time. So I'd like to go back to what you're saying about community. And you can... that was really good. I think listeners would really enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I'm bloody glad.
And you can chime into this little community part that Sayang puts forward. And then maybe we could hear one poem as well after that.
Please.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Yes.
And if you want to swear in that one, we'll do a warning, but you know.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay. Let's, it's art.
It's art. It's art.
We'll allow it for that, but I'll do a language warning if there is, but let me know if there is. Okay. Sayang.
What I was saying, what we just really need are grassroots community spaces being built by and for people on the ground. We can't keep relying on the right person in power, the right government, to decide that, yes, this Pride Center should happen or whatnot. And Midsummer and these corporate events, I was talking to a friend recently who actually managed to quit their job as part of the Midsummer boycott. And I was like, oh.
Amazing.
Heck yes. There's no swearing there. Heck yes.
And it's hard to do. It's
bloody difficult. Yeah, and I was trying to find out, how did you pull that off? Yeah. And they did it because, like, one, they were already on the dole, massively helpful.
Yeah.
We all need an income, and you can't wait for the time it takes to pull that together if you can access it always spontaneously. And also because they were already very intertwined with community, they were able to still access housing support and food and have the utilities taken care of, still looked after making that massive leap. And that's where I'm really curious to see how we can actually build networks and systems that let us sustain ourselves. Eventually, I'd love to find a way to live without Centrelink because medical exemption has ended. I'm back job hunting. I don't like this. It's not fun. I shouldn't have to do this. I'm busy enough already. And I've been reading a bit, and I feel like Shirley's been brought up on 3CR before, but the Black Panther survival programs that would run basically just rendered every other service obsolete. They were doing, like, obviously people know mostly about food and whatnot, but there was childcare, there was pest control, plumbing, any kind of issue you could think of that would need to be addressed was done.
Yeah.
And that's why I would really, really love to see the community to start to build our own community centers, living spaces where you're running aircon and heating, where you're serving meals, where we're finding ways to build networks to supply medicine and healthcare to people who are otherwise facing systemic violence within the NDIS or other healthcare systems. I want to see us building networks, like getting fleets of cars and trucks to move people around, get us to appointments, move furniture when we need to, supporting through legal aid. There's so much that I believe we can be doing, I want to see more of. The conversation you had with, was it Matt from Basalt Buddies?
Yep.
Yeah, that was so great to listen to. We need to see more of that, and I want to see it so just everywhere happening.
Yeah.
Because the most effective community you're ever going to have and work with is the community that's within a 15-minute walking distance of you.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have friends who can help you who are ride or die, but if they're 2 hours away by car, you can't call on them as needed.
Yeah. Vasi, how do you feel about that?
I mean, yes, I completely agree. And, like, I relate to that in a way, sense that I've been moving around the Melbourne metro area and, like, outside of it so many times in the past 18 months. But I managed to find, like, a very spread out community that's all around. And now I had to, like, start thinking about how I can rebuild that again. Like, yeah. they're not going to be perfect because, like, I now live in Clyde North, which is, like, in the southeastern suburbs.
Yeah.
And it's also a very rapidly gentrifying space with, like, roads subjected to flooding, houses being built en masse on, like, marshland. And a lot of native grasslands being destroyed. It sucks. But also, I had to, like, see what kind of community I can build again. Like, outside of, obviously, my partner and my stepchildren.
Yeah.
So there's, like, and her friends and family and, like, just expanding what I have.
Yeah. I think now might be a nice time to finish up and have a poem.
Okay, cool.
Do you need a moment to get it up on your phone?
Yes, I do. I have a very long pass key.
No, well, let's hear from a message then.
Celebrate all that unites us and host your own Feast for Freedom this autumn. Cook delicious global recipes curated by refugees and our guest chefs, and come together with your friends, family and community while raising vital funds for people seeking asylum. Register now at feastforfreedom.org.au. The Asylum Seeker Resource Centre is a 3CR supporter.
We in the diaspora stand in solidarity with the Greek people who are calling for justice and change. Join us Friday, February 28 at 12 p.m. at the Greek Consulate of Melbourne, 37 to 39 Albert Road, Melbourne. Organised by Greek Australians for a Free Palestine, Greek Democritus Workers League and 3CR Greek Resistance Bulletin.
Okay, so this is a funny one. Well, not a funny one, but it's called 4 years. It's about time and how I've been perceiving that.
Yeah.
So, okay, here we go. 4 years. The only years worth a memory and worth remembering. As the four-year-old adult childishly pushing further, further, further. Through historical revolutions and the draw of a yell for freedom in love. Freedom from life where there is a buried activist under the state's boots. In fossilized nations where there's a buried history under the state's boots, fossilized in time. Where there's dysphoria clawing at the edges. Fossilized breath caught in military-grade mustard gas. Fossilized mother wounds that parasitize researching for the other version. Internally aborted. Shorter breath, tear gas, scraping transgendered lungs, and queered time. In a passing of nation states, as an empire breathes its final gasps. In the midst of warm community, a lie sometimes, but friends and love in the empire's grasp are forever. Time is too queer to want to live anymore. Search for that shout for freedom in love and a search for a life that began in a fascist revival in the wake of a pandemic's killing off and blood from genocided and collapsed nations and lives in the fascist grip. And a thought of killing, a raging, breathlessly gasping evil empire whose final gasps that was, what was it back earlier under the raging lion's claw? Or what was it earlier under the policeman's shoes? Or what was it earlier but lost? In history that will burst into the beast's guts in pinks and blues and whites and rainbow bleeding, but time has been too queer to allow to live any longer. But yearn for the sight of the trauma and freedom and traumatizing gasping and peripheral vision spreading through riot squads and passionate rioting. Rattling police barriers and a choking, choking, shouting, fuck the police. Time too queer to search instead for that version that never lived for the empire and never lived in dysphoric panic, but instead was self-aborted. I only existed for 4 years. I only existed for 4 years. I only existed for 4 years. I only existed for 4 years.
Thank you, Vasi, so much. Thank you, Sayang. And stay tuned.
I swore because it was art.
Stay tuned for Think Again. This art. Is Emily Waramara, Magic Woman Dancing.
This soul I knew, she hurt herself in ways you couldn't imagine. She wasn't shy, she was very outspoken and open. Oh, a star-struck divine vessel and dreams that would provoke them. There's something oh so lovely about her. There's something oh so lovely about her.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.